Fortunately, it's only once per year and once per child. I might be a bad mother, but I don't think any parent in their right mind, even a very loving one, could find their child's birthday party tolerable. It's my personal definition of hell. Noisy children at the center of attention, conversations between parents judging each other with as much discretion as the red dress I'm wearing today. In other words, none. Curiously, it's not my plunging neckline, but the strawberry shortcake on the table that is the object of everyone's attention. People ask if I made it. I notice that several parents share this strange obsession, determining which mothers bake cakes themselves for their child's birthday. Is there a known link between being a good mother and being a good baker? I haven't read that in any article, though I have to admit that I take more notes on love than on parenting. In fact, my husband made it, which earns me an approving look. A husband who bakes, I'm so lucky. It seems unnecessary to mention that he is also the one who tied balloons to the front door, hung colorful garlands in the trees, covered the sideboard with an animal print tablecloth, and filled the large glass carafes with lemonade and ice. He also set up speakers in the yard for music. Everyone around me is praising all the things my husband has done for my daughter today. I'm so lucky, it seems. But being an excellent father does not automatically make you an excellent husband. More and more children arrive. Some are my son's classmates. I discover that, even at school, my son and my daughter hang out in the same circles. In my memory, there was an insurmountable border between the little kids in second grade and the ones 2 years older in fourth grade. Everything is too red today, too nervous. Too much noise, too much sun, too many requests. We don't have any more plastic cups, I'm told. My husband asks me to fetch a bottle of chilled white wine. Lucie calls to me. Her daughter Anaïs stained her skirt with strawberry coulis. Do I have something to clean it? Is there more lemonade in one of the fridges? Where is the bathroom? Would it be possible to have a glass of water? My son is allergic to nuts. Are there any in the shortcake? We take a photo with the four of us as my daughter blows out the candles. Our family portrait will be perfect. This day has not been a total waste. Then she unwraps her gifts, presents from her classmates, a gift from her brother. It's the first year my son has given something to his little sister. Did my husband help him? Then from us. 8 presents to celebrate her 8 years, including colorful sequins for dressing up, a book by an illustrator she likes, watercolor pencils. I see that my husband has wrapped them in 8 different wrapping papers, creating a heap of colors, textures, and shapes, all different but charming together. I am moved and jealous at the same time. I can't remember the last time my husband made the effort to switch up the paper or the color of the label for each of my presents. For me, he plans weekends in Venice, nights in a hotel, romantic dinners, outings to the opera or the theater. Certainly lovely and thoughtful, but nothing that keeps, and certainly nothing that comes in colorful wrapping paper. On top of it, he's never made me a cake or hung garlands in the trees for my birthday. Today, my daughter is sociable and sunny, even talkative, so she inherited her charisma from her father. I'm not sure that's a good thing. I don't understand. We never hear her say a word at home. Over the course of a conversation, I learn that she wants to become a veterinarian. Now I understand why so many of her classmates gave her animal-themed gifts, and why my husband chose a tablecloth with an animal print. He seems to have been in the loop. I feel as though I've been gone for 2 years on vacation without them, or like I just woke up from a long coma. My own family eludes me. I stop counting how many glasses of wine I've had. I shouldn't have had so much to drink in such a hostile environment. When I'm drunk, I have a tendency to let my guard down. I'm afraid of tensing up conspicuously when my husband talks about me in the third person as I'm standing right next to him, or stiffening when he insists that I speak about my current translation project, the best-selling novel of a young Irish writer that was adapted into a TV series. It's a huge opportunity. People can't wait for it here in France. Isn't that right, sweetheart? I serve myself another glass of wine to keep from saying anything when my husband praises my translation work to the small circle that's formed around him, but forgets to mention that I'm also a high school teacher. A wife who teaches is a much less impressive trophy. When I come out of the kitchen, I find my husband deep in conversation with Lucie. Shamelessly, he's devouring her with his eyes with as much fervor as though she were revealing the secrets of the universe. She's probably talking about the construction on their country house, and after being subjected to that conversation this morning, I know there's nothing so exciting about it. They might as well be making love in the middle of the garden. I don't move. Lucie's two red cheeks give her away. It's written all over her face. My husband is flirting with her. Then I lose all control. It's no longer my brain that's in charge, but my instincts. I see myself drag Pierre inside on the pretext of needing help in the kitchen. He follows me without seeming to understand, but without resisting either. We're going up the stairs, and he knows that the kitchen is on the ground floor. I lock the door to the bathroom behind me and throw myself at him. My husband devoured his wife with his eyes. I'll devour her husband with my tongue. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Surprised at first, his mouth slowly responds to mine. He pulls my hair back, as though to resist for a moment, then gives in when I move my fingers to his pants. He has just enough time to say, "What are you doing?" I slide my underwear down my legs and guide him with my hand. When he enters me, he grabs my breasts with desperation, clinging on as though to two rocks on a cliff face. Everything disappears. The door against my ass, the bathroom where I shower every morning, my husband's close friend. I am transported to somewhere in the Alps, in the middle of a major climb, 300 meters over a void. His crazed thrusts are dizzying. Is it the forbidden fruit of extramarital sex? Or is Pierre just as brutal with Lucie? Does Pierre always make love as though he were going to die the next day? It only lasts a minute or two, but it's enough time for me to realize what I've just done. What a foolish risk. Cheating on my husband around so many witnesses, and cheating on my husband on a Saturday when I only do it on Thursdays. There are rules. They must be heeded. They're there to protect me. Why didn't I do what I always do? Lock it away, wait to be alone at night and take out my notebook to write down what wounded me. Take some time, distance myself. That's the rule. Always wait until the next day before reacting. I come out of the bathroom trembling and wet, and I make eye contact with my husband through the window. He's in the garden, a glass in his hand, and he's staring at me. He turns his head away, but I'm certain of it. His eyes locked on mine. My panic is so intense that I feel like I'm drowning. Is it possible my husband saw me? Or did the window act like a two-way mirror? I saw him, but he couldn't see me. Did he only catch sight of a silhouette? Or did he see me come out of the bathroom, followed by Pierre, hurriedly adjusting his clothes? I have to keep calm, collect myself, remain rational, assess the parameters. My husband was in the garden. He must be 15 meters from the house. I was on the second floor. A floor is 3 meters high, but since our ground floor is elevated, we're already 5 meters up, and I'm more than a meter from the ground, so let's round up to 6. We form a right-angled triangle, 15 by 6 meters. Pythagoras, Pythagoras, Pythagoras. What is the formula again? The square of the length of the hypotenuse is equal to the sum of the squares of the lengths of the other two sides. 15 squared is 225. 6 squared is 36. 225 plus 36 equals 261. Now I have to find the root of 261. 16 times 16 is 256. 17 times 17 is 289. So that's it. Between 16 and 17 meters. That's the distance between me and my husband. Not much. Not much at all. But how many glasses of wine has my husband had to drink? 4? 5? He's not drunk, but has he had enough to blur his vision? 5 o'clock, summer solstice. The sun is already to the west. I must have been backlit. I stare at my reflection in the entryway mirror and command myself one last time to stay calm. I start by reapplying my lipstick, a tint slightly darker than what I normally wear, halfway between violet and maroon. Then I let down my blonde hair so as not to have to redo my bun. It flows neatly down my back. My diligent brushing has saved me. No matter what happens, act as though nothing is wrong. Stay in control. Even if my husband saw me, he'll think he was imagining things. He can't honestly think that his wife would sleep with another man at her daughter's birthday party. Improbability will be my best defense. When I go back to the garden, Lucie asks me if everything is okay. She says I have a funny look on my face. It's true. I'm deep in my mental calculations. The root of 261 is not a whole number. And on top of that, I just orgasmed, which makes my cheeks flush. And I can feel her husband's semen running down my legs. I wonder if anyone can see it.